840 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The search for the suspect in a deadly Yakima, Washington convenience store shooting has come to an end. Yakima Police Chief Matthew Murray.
The suspect apparently shot and killed himself, and that was prior to officers' arrival. There were officers who heard the shots, but no one saw him actually do that.
Three people were killed in this morning's shooting. Police say the suspect stole a car, drove off, and before taking his own life, called his mother, making incriminating statements. CBS's Steve Futterman with the latest on mass shootings in California over the past few days.
An emotional Governor Gavin Newsom, with two mass killings in his state in a 40-hour period, referred to the number of national incidents already this year.
39 now of these mass shootings. And we're only at day 24.
He then began reading the names of cities where mass killings have taken place.
Sutherland, Sandy Hook.
And he ended with two more additions.
And I started writing in Monterey Park. And now I got to write in Half Moon Bay. What the hell is going on?
Newsom said something needs to be done. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Several tornadoes touched down in Texas and Louisiana, including one that caused damage in a Houston suburb. CBS's Janet Chamlian reports from Deer Park, Texas.
That is the sound of chainsaws and power tools here in the community of Deer Park, Texas, after a tornado swept through here late this afternoon. I'm standing in a strip center with a Little Caesars Pizza, a UPS store, a Kolache store. All of them have the windows broken, debris all over the parking lot. The owners now looking and assessing the damage.
No injuries or deaths reported. Meantime, the country's midsection is getting snow and ice. Attorney General Merrick Garland is so far not weighing in on recently discovered documents marked classified found at the home of former Vice President Mike Pence. University of Virginia political science analyst Larry Sabato weighs
in. Pence has really helped both Biden and Trump. I'm sure that wasn't his intention, but it actually does show that presidents and vice presidents and probably others are likely to have at least some classified material.
Walmart is raising its minimum wage to $14 an hour for store employees. CBS's Matt Piper reports.
Starting in early March, the retailer's average wage in the U.S. is expected to be more than $17.50. Walmart says about 340,000 store employees will get a raise because of the move. The chain is the country's largest private employer, and the move to $14 brings it closer to many of its competitors, including Target and Amazon, which have raised their minimum wage to $15 an hour.
Stocks closed mixed on Wall Street. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin is offering a new round of standard response protocol and standard reunification method training. They help schools learn what to do in an emergency and reunite kids with their families afterward. Attorney General Josh Call says the idea is a comprehensive approach to school safety statewide. An event known as the Ojibwe Winter Olympics returns to northern Wisconsin's Madeline Island next month. It's the first snow snake festival in more than 150 years. The federal government shut down the games in the mid-1800s because of gambling. Organizers are working to bring back traditional indigenous culture. There'll be workshops and other attractions. In sports, the Bucks beat Detroit last night 150-130. The Badgers lost to Northwestern 66-63. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
Thank you. I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Catch Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow at its brand new time, 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays.
The city of Shanghai started administering an inhalable COVID-19 vaccine. I hear a lot of you saying the same thing I had in my head. I don't know about that.
As long as they're not just crop dusting everyone.
Crop dusting, that's exactly what I think people would be fearful of. I would not trust the Chinese government. I would trust people who really know about inhaling something and the good that it does you. Of course, I'm talking about Dom and Crute.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUK Radio.
Focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. I want to start today off little bit of a rant on our healthcare system. Again, as you know, not a huge fan of the monopolization of healthcare. Not fond of how large these insurance companies, how large these healthcare companies have gotten with care and cost and all of that stuff, not seem to be as much of a priority as one would think it should be. But here I sit, torn quad tendon, patellar tendonitis, whole knee not happy. Let's just go with that. Knee not happy, so I go and see my doctor. And the doctor says, you know, this is the course of treatment. We're going to do this, this. You're going to be off for several weeks off of work. Get comfortable. Prescribe some drugs and a brace. And I'm going, what kind of brace? Well, basically an immobilizer. But not just any immobilizer. There was a name to it. Like a T this or something. And it's fancy. Wow, it's very nice. In fact, tweeted out a picture of it today saying, look what I got, brand new, custom fit. So as the guy who's fitting me for this contraption, I'm asking him questions. Why this one? Last time I was in one of these, it was back in high school when I tore up a knee. They gave you that Velcro one with the little metal sides, and you just strapped it on, and it probably $20 did you well. How much is this monstrosity? How much? No, understand. This is where the right would tell you, we need skin in the game and all that. I have the best healthcare you're going to find. I'm not going to pay a dime for this because our healthcare is good. It's going to cover. I paid my copay. That's all I'm going to see of this bill. I already know that. I know that going in. The doctor has said, hey, you need this particular brace. Okay. So I go, how much is this contraption? So the person who was fitting for me said, well, we charge the insurance company something like $900. I'm going, really? $900? Really? And I'm sitting here thinking, do I really need this? And I said, well, what if I was paying it out of my pocket? What would you charge then? He goes, well, let me check. He comes back and says like $180. And I'm going, wait a second. Hold on. Let me get this straight. I have really good insurance. You're going to charge the insurance company $900, but if I reached into my pocket and paid you for it, it'd be $180? What sense does that make? And now in my mind, I'm going, I should just buy it, pay the $180, send the check in for the bill in for reimbursement and get my money back. And I'm going, then all of this stuff goes, would this work? And I'm just going, it's incredible to me. So then I go back and I tell my wife about this. She says, well, you know, they have this thing, you know, it'll come up. They'll probably not pay the $900. And it's true. They negotiate with these providers and they get, you know, much, much better. They probably, who knows? They'll probably pay even less than $180 for it. But the fact that these healthcare companies are charging this kind of outrageous, just insane number is incredible to me. And it got me thinking today about, you know, just how screwed up our healthcare system really is. And how anybody who's used it, you know, is left scratching their head on how complicated the billing is, how complicated it all is. And it's meant to be complicated. We do this stuff on purpose so people stop asking questions. The reason I bring this up is there was a Gallup poll today. Found that a majority of people in this country, 57%, believed that the federal government should make sure that every American had access to affordable, high-quality health care. And you go, my first thought was, only 57% believes that their neighbor, not just themselves, but their neighbor should have health care? That their children, that their grandchildren, that, you know, that they themselves should have. It's incredible to me. But the other part of this, and I guess, look, it's not surprising that a majority of people think that everyone should have health care and government should have a hand in it. The part that I found interesting, 53%, we want private insurance. We don't want that government-run stuff. And I'm going, you know, this is the part that's amazing to me. Now, you can thank Obamacare for capping the amount of profit that these big insurance companies can put in their pocket. Now, understand, they found other ways to funnel money into other things that doesn't go into healthcare. But what we've seen is a mass monopolization. In my area, there are like two companies that own all the hospitals. And they're buying everything up. And they're making it, you know, look, I used to have a small office doctor, knew the doctor's name. He knew the kids' names. I mean, it was, now he retired, sold out to one of these big hospital chains, and you're just a number. You're just a faceless number in the production wheel. And this is what's happened as we've allowed these big companies, you know, for efficiency's sake, so we can use the healthcare dollar better. And yet, understand, we spend more on healthcare than any industrialized nation in the world. And we get worse outcomes, we get less care, all of the negatives. And for me, it's this monopolization that's been part of this. This allowing a system to spring up that is so complicated and convoluted that nobody can figure it out. The part that, again, comes back to me that's interesting is a majority of people want this system. They do. Because if you're saying, we want private health insurance, this is what you are saying you want. You want a convoluted system. You want a difficult system. You want one. And I would argue probably the 53% who want that private insurance have probably never used it, have never been in the healthcare system and had to fight with these private companies to pay bills, to get things credited, to get the right billing. It's crazy. But it's our system. And there's still a majority of people in this country that have been trained like Pavlovian dogs. When we start talking about a single health insurance program like Medicare for all, they lose their ever-loving flippant minds. Yet you ask Granny loves Medicare. Republicans have done everything they can do to destroy Medicare and are trying as we speak by using the debt ceiling to go after Social Security and Medicare. But Medicare is what keeps seniors alive. And they tried to privatize a portion of it, which, interestingly enough, this is that one of those weird moments where you go, the privatized portion of Medicare costs more than the public Medicare by a lot and has much fewer people in it. So we're covering fewer people for more money, but it's privatized, so it must be better. And that's what we've been sold. Me, I believe in one giant insurance pool. There should be one insurance pool. One. And look, I'm not even 100% against the idea of it being administered by a private company and overseen by the federal government, by we the people. so that maybe we don't have these convoluted structures. Maybe we don't have this complicated billing stuff. You need a brace, you get a brace. You need to see a doctor, you get to see a doctor. You need heart surgery, you get that. You get what you need. Here's where the fun comes in. And the question just popped up. Who then determines what you need? Is it a private corporation who's got a profit motive at heart? Is it government bureaucrats who are going, hey, we can take that healthcare money and spend it elsewhere? Or is it your doctor who goes, you need this brace? This brace is going to give you the best shot to heal up. I'd prefer be my doctor. The insurance company is just paying the bill. And this is one of these moments where it's not just the healthcare. The monopolization of this country, the kind of power that we've given to corporate America. Right now the Justice Department is, I guess, and a number of states are suing Google, claiming that they have abused their monopoly power on online advertising. And they have. Anyone who's ever Googled something then knows for the next 6 months, that's all you see on your ads. Yesterday, I looked up how much a guitar case would be for my daughter's, the guitar I gave my daughter. And now all I see are ads for guitar cases. I mean, it's really quite remarkable that they can do this. And it's angering that they do. But the sad reality is we're at a moment where there's going to be no solving these problems. There's not. There's nobody in Congress who's going to solve this. There's no one who's going to pick these issues up and move it forward. And I can see why people wouldn't want a publicly controlled health insurance system. Because we've got Republicans who are hell-bent on destroying anything that we the people have. It's why we can't have nice things. It's the reason we can't have nice things, because we've got Republicans who have a hammer and want to destroy it. Like a two-year-old in a china shop, they just can't see the pretty glass without breaking it. And that means healthcare, that means education, that means infrastructure, that means... I look at Marsha Blackburn, senator from Tennessee, who today tweeted out that Americans are going to Mexico to buy eggs because they're cheaper. Only in Biden's America. And I read this and I'm going, wait a second. Americans are going to India, to Thailand, to Mexico for healthcare. How come I'm not hearing you complain about that? Because then you'd have to identify that our healthcare system's broken. Now, on the egg front, I don't know that they're going there or not. When I'm near New Jersey, I go to New Jersey for gas. Is that Biden's fault? And it got me thinking, who sets the prices for eggs? Is that the government? Is there a Department of Egg that I don't know about? Who sets the prices? Who sets production levels? Oh, don't mind the fact that we have a massive avian bird flu epidemic going through our production facility. Don't address that. But it's Biden's America. Egg prices are high. And my thought is, is she advocating for, I don't know, a Department of Egg? Is she advocating for setting prices on said egg? Are we going to regulate the chicken? I mean, I know. It would be socialism. That's socialism, Rick. I don't think she knows that. I think she just saw an opportunity to go, we're going to make Joe Biden look bad. Only in Biden's America. If you remember during Trump's America, there were no eggs on the shelf. Just kind of throwing that out there. Want to hear your thoughts? 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. You got any healthcare stories? Any of those moments where you go, what? You're going to charge me how much? And how much are you charging the insurance company? Isn't this fraud? There's something fraudulent about this. I want to hear it. Quick break, right back. you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible two-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, classified documents found at Vice President Mike Pence's house. Yeah, evidently Pence has got classified documents too. Claims he didn't know how they got there. You know, they were, I guess maybe in a, maybe parked next to his car in the garage. Who knew? Again, makes me think, who's keeping track of this stuff? Now, I find it interesting. Jesse Waters, the Fox, the F channel mouthpiece that replaced Falafel and Loofah Sponge guy. He comes out and says, Pence, seriously? We have this great thing going with Joe. Come on, man. And then he confessed to it. He couldn't just destroy it. We'd have never known. Let that sink in for a second. You got the voice of the F channel who has been crucifying Biden for not knowing that he had classified documents and turned them over, saying, you know, why didn't you just destroy it? Why didn't you just tear it up? Why didn't you just rip it, shred it? Do the Ollie, call up Ollie North. He could have shredded it for you. I mean, let that sink in for a second. Let it sink in for a second. What they're saying. It's all about the politics. It's not about doing the right thing. And look, I've said from the beginning, Biden needs to be held accountable for having this material. But there's a huge difference between Mike Pence and Joe Biden on one side, and Donald Trump on the other. Both of them. And look, I bet you Dan Quayle right now is rummaging through his storage units to see if he's got any of those old documents. Yeah, he's got a bunch of Mr. Potato Heads, I'm sure. The difference is that Trump tried to lie, tried to do all kinds of justification and gymnastics to say, no, they're mine. I get to keep them. They're pretty folders. Oh, they're souvenirs. They're keepsakes. Oh, they were just going to throw them away anyway. Yeah, the classified documents. The National Archives fought with him over a year to get them back. There's a huge difference. And it comes back to, it's never really the crime that gets you into trouble. It's the cover-up. It's the lying about it. Ask any of those people who've had affairs. Ask Bill Clinton. Had the first person who shoved the microphone in his face said, hey, did you... have Congress with Monica Lewinsky, you go, yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry if I made a mistake. He would have taken some blowback. He wouldn't have gotten impeached for it. He tried to do some mental gymnastics. You know, what is. There's the difference. Now, here's the thing. In the coming days, there are potentially going to be charges against Trump as the Georgia prosecutors, the district attorney there, this Fannie Willis, wraps up their special grand jury. There's a report been written. It evidently has recommended charges. They are now deciding with prosecutors what charges those will be and against whom they shall be. I'm hoping a large dragnet of right-wing conspirators. You know, maybe bring in DeSantis from Florida. Maybe bring in Brian Kemp. Rudy. I mean, Rudy's going to be at the heart of this. Going to be interesting to see just how bad this report comes out for Trump, because he's going to be indicted on something. And everyone has said, Georgia is his blind spot. That phone call, you know, the perfect phone call of, hey, just go find me those votes that I need. Just go find them wherever you need to find them. Check the couch cushions, call up George W. Bush and have him run around the Oval Office like he did with looking for weapons of mass destruction. But find them. And little did he know, Georgia is not Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, both ends of the call have to know they're being recorded. Georgia is not a two-party state. And there are recordings. And perfect recordings, perfectly clear audio, hearing Trump say what he said. That, what you are, what's known as Exhibit A, Your Honor. But here again, I have, at this point, my concern with Trump is almost gone. Do I think he needs to be held accountable for his crimes? Yeah. And do I think there are crimes? Yeah. And it's, again, it's always the attempt to cover up. It's always the attempt. It's the aftermath. Now, you've got some Republicans who are saying, you know, we need to be reasonable. And I look at this this Patrick Henry of this Republican Patrick Henry, who's the Financial Services Committee chairman. Patrick thinks it's a good idea for Republicans not to do what they're going to do. Because I think we all know where they want to go. I think we all know that Marjorie Trainwreck Green and Jim Jordan's committees are going to be, well, how did I see it put? Dumpster fires? Because again, it's what they want to do. They want to use these committees as attack arms, as political attack arms to go after Biden and Hunter Biden. And this you know, representative from North Carolina is saying, well, you know, hold on. you know, we got to be reasonable, realistic about the demands that we're pushing forward. Because look what they want. They want to create a 30% tax on everything you buy just so they can abolish the IRS. And then they want to destroy Social Security and Medicare because, hey, we're going to save it. We're going to save it. So they're going to kill what little health safety net we have in this country. And they're going to tax the working class like nobody's business. Let that sink in, working people. I mean, this is the part that I'm struggling with. Why someone who punches a clock and collects a paycheck at the end of the week would vote for a Republican is beyond me. Oh, I know why. I know. It's because those other one, that other side, they believe in theories about race that are critical. And then they're the drag queen show people. And to be honest, I don't care about either one of those issues. Even a little bit. You know what I care about? Making sure that everyone has food on their table, has a roof over their head, has opportunity to do better. Their children have opportunities. You get the health care, the education, the opportunities that you need. That's what we should be fighting for. Why is it we don't have working people in the streets over poverty is beyond me. Yet, last weekend you had people out and march for life. We're gonna crowd the streets and force people to have children that they can't afford that we're unwilling to pay for, because we're not gonna pay taxes. Stop with the world. Stop thinking about the world they're moving us towards. And it's people who are immovable. The story came out today that a number of the incoming freshman Republicans have turned down the invitation to go to the White House for a reception for freshman legislators. And you go, this has been tradition for years. And look, even if I hate you, I mean, with all of my heart and soul and my being, I'm still going to reach a hand out and try and find, especially if it's my job, to find common ground. You know, I used to sit down with management as a union rep and you know, couldn't stand the person across the table, but you're there for a reason. It's not your personal beliefs. It's the beliefs of and the needs of your constituents. And we've forgotten that. So are we going to be able to solve big problems like, oh, I don't know, this idiocy and the debt ceiling? Are we going to be able to solve big problems like getting people health care? Not with these people. So the plea, working people, get to the right issues. And I know, Thomas Franks, what's the matter with Kansas? You know, they're voting on their interests, and their interests are the gay marriage and all the other device of the abortion, all that other stuff.
The Shaw, 101 FM.
WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
CBS News Brief. Police say a man wanted in the killing of three people at a convenience store in Yakima, Washington, shot himself as officers approached him hours later. Police Chief Matt Murray.
Medical care tried to save his life, but he was later pronounced deceased.
California Governor Gavin Newsom stops in Half Moon Bay, where a farm worker will be arraigned tomorrow on seven counts of murder. Newsom acknowledges that he did not immediately address people in a Monterey Park shooting, where 11 were killed because...
Now, I'll tell you what, I did that selfishly, because I didn't have the guts to come up and say the same things we hear again and again and again. That was covered.
Several tornadoes reported in Texas, including near suburban Houston. Weather Channel meteorologist Mike Bettis on the storms moving east.
The threat area is most likely down along I-10, but storms come racing across Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama, and then through the panhandle of Florida into Georgia and the Carolinas. These are all spots where extreme winds and tornadoes will be possible.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matner with your headlines. One person is dead after a Sunday police chase in Milwaukee. Officers were pursuing a stolen car involved in an armed robbery when the vehicle with five teenage males inside crashed into another vehicle at an intersection. The 47-year-old passenger in that vehicle was killed. Four of the suspects were taken into custody at the scene along with a gun. The fifth hospitalized for injuries. The suspects range in age from 13 to 15 years old. Governor Evers delivers his first State of the State address in his second term tonight at the Capitol in Madison. The governor expected to focus on education, more funding for roads, broadband in rural areas, and restoring access to abortion in the state. You can hear the governor's speech beginning at 7 p.m. across the Civic Media Network. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
What are the governor's priorities for Wisconsin? Tony Evers will lay out his second-term plans during his State of the State address January 24th. You can hear it live on your local Civic Media radio station. Will abortion rights, Medicaid expansion, and legalizing marijuana be the top issues? Your favorite hosts also provide insight by breaking down the governor's address. The State of the State address live Tuesday, January 24th at 7 p.m. here on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
The radio show your mother warned you about.
Actual tyranny of a dictator. Dictator's going to dictate Putin. And what did Trump do? Trump kneeled to the man. Embarrassing Republicans. And you're still with the guy? This is your front runner in 2024? Are you even smoking some of Mike Lindell's crack? What are you thinking?
They're the GCCCP. We are the devil's advocates.
Live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6.
Governor Tony Evers, Tim Michaels, said you had gone, quote, full woke. Dr. Jill Underlie said that somebody who says that has no idea what we're doing in schools to make sure kids feel safe.
We want to make sure all kids feel supported. Tim Michaels, we don't teach CRT in our schools. You got to come to the present century here, Tim, and be cognizant of what actually goes in the schools. My guess is you've never been in a public school in Wisconsin.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Training. This is Jim Hightower saying, guess what? NRA then uses these worker training fees to fund its lobbying efforts that let restaurants pay poverty wages. And that, kids, is how inequality happens.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the Doomsday Clock. Yeah, you've heard of the Doomsday Clock. When it hits midnight, it's the end of humanity. Well, we're 90 seconds away. Evidently, the clock has moved forward to 90 seconds to midnight. Uh-oh. And this is one of those moments where if humanity's under attack, This is where my conservative friends are not wrong. We need to have big, strong military. We need to be able to fight our way out. Problem, you know, as we've been saying on this show for years, you got to build your war machine. We've evidently lost that capacity. In fact, a new report out over at the Wall Street Journal, I believe it was, says that we're unprepared. And gee, who could have predicted that? Oh, yeah, my next guest did it almost a decade ago, warned us of how bad things would be and how our military is heavily reliant on China. Gee, who could have predicted it? That's why I've asked my good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it's great to be with you, even with the doomsday clock where it is.
So you got the crystal ball there going. What are the lottery numbers? You got this one. What are the lottery numbers?
Yeah, although I hate being right about this. I mean, that's the challenge, is that when we I would say 2011, 2012, you know, we started getting reports that, you know, there were challenges in supply chains for materials and manufactured goods that have national security use or utilization. Everything literally from like munitions, okay, to high-tech microelectronics, to things like specialty metals. And it was across the board. It was across the board. And these were some scary deficits. And we went platform by platform. And by we, I'm using the royal we. We actually had a retired brigadier general and his team do this, who knows about this and who has had to do this procurement before, to go platform by platform into fighter jets and Abrams tanks and armored personnel carriers and submarines and what have you, and where there were only sole supplier, or there was a limited amount in the United States, and that we would have a real problem if either there was a shutdown, that plant closed, or we ran into a situation where we needed to scale up dramatically. And here we are today.
Yeah.
And here we are with the, you know, the Center for Strategic and International Studies did this report, and, you know, they reached all sorts of conclusions. I don't agree with them all about how we got here. And part of it has to do with Pentagon procurement. But the fact remains that we would have a very difficult time right now scaling up if all of a sudden the Chinese military tried to invade Taiwan, or if Putin escalated. And, you know, even with the arms that we've provided to Ukraine, and I'm glad that we have, I think it's very important that we do, you know, we're trying to pick up the pace so that we have the resupply available for our own military, for our allies, and for Ukraine when it needs this material. And it is a real, real challenge. And I hate to raise this because I don't want to sound like a warmonger. I'm not, you know, and I don't think the people who did the study are either. I don't think you are. But the fact is, if you're unprepared, our competitors, our enemies are going to know that. And they're going to totally take advantage of that situation. So we need to get our act together.
No, I'm of the Teddy Roosevelt mindset. You walk softly, but you carry a big stick. I'm not a warmonger by any stretch of the imagination, but there are people out there who want to do us harm, and being prepared for this. And this is something we have talked about this literally for over a decade. Your report came out a decade ago, and I can't imagine how much worse it is now from how bad it was back then. I'm sure it's gotten progressively worse. And I think most people are in the vein that I'm in. Nobody wants war. Nobody wants conflict. But I'm still, I agree with the Powell Doctrine even. Overwhelming force, you need to have a big stick.
Yeah.
I don't think we should be going using it all over the place. Let's be perfectly clear about that. But you got to be able to defend yourself. And the fact that we don't have the manufacturing capacity, as you've pointed out a couple of times, to ramp up as we did during World War II, that should frighten everyone.
Yeah, and I guess the challenge that I struggle with is that in a lot of ways it's not like our defense budget hasn't increased, because it has, right? I mean, it definitely has, and you know, I it's a real head scratcher to me, like where this money's going to, because it's not like our enlisted men are making a lot of money and their families, they're not particularly well paid. And we do have all of these shortcomings in the supply chains. So, you know, it sounds to me like a lot of these big defense contractors are living large, but they're also doing this on the cheap in a way where their supply chain is a bit ragged and very vulnerable. And so it's definitely time that we both reform this and then lean into these supply chain issues. And again, this is not a mystery. We have known exactly where they are for more than a decade. And this latest report also sheds light on it. The administration has done its own studies on supply chains, 1,300 pages about what the challenges are. And I know that the Defense Industrial Base unit within the Pentagon is well aware of this too. It's just marshaling the forces into action. And here's what gives me hope. I mean, we have done this to some extent with semiconductors. Okay.
Right.
You know, the alarm bell was sounded and we've done a little bit of this. So it is possible. And it shows that if you have a policy and you have a little bit of investment, what you can do. But we got to get on it. Like right now should be a big issue.
No. On the chips front. I mean, it's always amazing to me. The smart chips to make our smart bombs smart. We're reliant on foreign countries to get the smart bombs, to get these chips. And you go, if you ever get into a war scenario where we need them, I don't think I would want to be the one making that phone call. Hello, China. Would you mind sending us some of those chips to make our smart bombs smart so we can drop them on you? I don't know how that phone. Actually, I do know how that phone call goes. Click.
Right. Well, look. Think about it this way. Even our Taiwan ally. You know, where a lot of this production is based. You know, if China's invading them, we're not going to get chips from Taiwan. I mean, it's just not going to happen. And so, it's out of necessity that we are scaling up our semiconductors, but that's the tip of the iceberg. I mean, We have other microelectronics, we have other specialty metals, we have munitions, we have, even the platforms like the Abrams tanks and what have you. We're gonna need to ramp that up. And it's painful for me to say this in a lot of ways with all the priorities that we have that we need to do as a country, but this has to be one of them.
Yeah. And the thing that gets me, Scott, is our defense budget is $778 billion.
Yeah.
We spend more than, what is it? What's the little talking point? More than the next 20 countries combined.
Yeah.
And yet this is how we're choosing to operate this. Now, as people like to remind me, well, don't we have a Berry Amendment that says that we need to make all this stuff here? Isn't the law that you have to make your war machine here? How do they get around that? Because I was under the impression years ago until I met you and that report that everything for our military was made here at home, because that would make sense. But somehow they weasel their way around it.
Yeah, though there's a lot of loopholes. So there's waivers available. You know, and as you get to the third or fourth tier of the supply chain, there's not a lot of visibility into that. In fact, there were discoveries made of Chinese parts in sophisticated equipment after some forensic audits were done, because the contractors didn't even know where the stuff came from. And then we do have agreements with some of our allies, too, that we can jointly produce or share production of that. I'm comfortable with some of that, but I do think that it's been way overextended. Okay. And the fact that we have, for instance, one supplier of armor plate and other types of metal that can go into aircraft carriers and submarines, and it's pretty close to your home base, right? It's in Coatesville, Pennsylvania. And that's the one place in the United States of America where this is made. And, you know, we got it. And that mill struggles to survive from time to time because of the commercial market, too, and all the imports that are coming in and all the struggles. And so we definitely need to do a better job of this. We have to get at it. And believe me when I say that we're going to be focusing on this in a renewed sense this year. And Rick, I know you love and cherish this big report that we did 10 years ago, because I've seen it on your show. And it's not like this was a secret to lawmakers. I mean, we took it to every office in Capitol Hill. We took it to the Obama administration. I know the president of the steelworkers did, handed it personally to the president. I know that Rich Trumka, rest in peace, handed it to Donald Trump when he was president. And I know the Biden folks are aware of it, too. So it's, again, it's not like this is a secret.
No, but, no, it filtered down to me. So everybody should have it.
And it's available on our website. So if you go to AmericanManufacturing.org and you look up Remaking American Security, you can get a copy for yourself. So it's it is really eye opening.
No, I highly suggest. In fact, we'll find it and we'll get links out on social media how folks can take a look at this. Now, I guess the question that I have that is kind of important, because I just had this conversation with my kids the other day about, we were talking about World War II and how the country, you know, moved from, you know, consumer production to war footing very quickly. We were able to turn manufacturing, into airplanes and tank production. What used to make automobiles made planes and tanks.
Yeah.
Do we have the kind of production facilities left? I mean, we've hollowed out our manufacturing base all across every industry, just about. We've lost millions of jobs. And all of those factories, we just did a tour not too long ago, the Working Class Heroes radio tour, that took us into places that used to produce stuff. Those facilities are crumbling, already torn down. The steel mill out in Bethlehem's a casino. We've completely changed. Can we, in the event of something horrible happening, do you think we have the capacity to turn on a dime and ramp up production?
You know, I am an optimist, and I do think that when we rally to a national cause that will, and we put our best minds and our resources to it, that we can be successful. But I will say that we are not starting from a position of great strength here. You know, as you mentioned, heading into World War II, and this is very important because the amount of tonnage that we were able to deliver rapidly changed the course of the war. It really did, and every historian agrees with that, that it was the U.S. manufacturing power that completely overwhelmed the enemy. We could do it faster, better than anybody else on a remarkable scale. And so, it's a lot harder to convert McDonald's or a Walmart into a factory than it is something that's already making something. And so that's the challenge, is that we don't have those industrial assets that we used to. But again, I mean, there's a unit in the Defense Department that is supposed to be considering all of this that theoretically has a scale-up plan, but it has to be sustained, because we just had a national emergency within the last couple of years with respect to the pandemic, and we had to try to scale up PPE and pharmaceuticals. And the pharmaceuticals was a great success story, and one of the few, the Operation Warp Speed, one of the few things that really worked in the Trump administration, because we threw a massive federal investment in it. We threw everything at it. Everything all at once at it, and it was quite successful. The mask was a harder go because all of the suppliers were so dependent on China and they didn't want to change their ways. And so even when you had companies saying, I want to produce surgical quality masks or N95 masks, the hospitals, the government, they were reluctant to change their suppliers from the Chinese-based ones. And it made it very difficult for these companies to stay in business, but they did. And you know what? Everybody else started making masks too. I mean, anybody who could make a mask was making a mask in their shop. And so that's the part that I guess gives me hope that we can rally and we can get this done. But this should serve as a wake-up call.
Yeah.
I don't mean this in any warmongering sense at all, but you have to be prepared. You really do.
And look, we're spending, like I said, more than the next 20, 25 countries combined. At least we should be able to get it made here in the U.S. Now, before I let you go, this other story, completely same topic, completely different level of seriousness. I'm looking at this story about Pyrex, which I had always thought was an American company, made all their products in the U.S. In fact, my wife's nodding her head, very thrilled that we bought American-made Pyrex dishes and measuring cups. I'm now finding out because of this article, maybe not.
Yeah, it's, I mean, talk about getting people upset. And there was someone on our staff who bought Pyrex during the pandemic and got burned by this too. But yeah, they're an iconic American brand. Anybody who bakes or cooks knows what the Pyrex measuring cups are. But during the pandemic, when everybody was baking and cooking, the good news for Pyrex is they got a lot of demand in. The bad news, they didn't expand their production enough in the United States. And to fulfill Amazon orders, they had it imported from China, and it was still marketed on Amazon as Made in America Pyrex. So for people who were expecting Made in America Pyrex, and there were at least 110,000 units sold, they got made in China. And so I guess the good news is that the law caught up with Pyrex. They're getting fined. I don't think the Federal Trade Commission has enough authority yet to do more fines than this. I mean, I think they can do better. It's like $125,000. But, you know, there's little recourse for consumers other than, you know, Pyrex is changing their marketing about this. And so it's deeply upsetting, but it just talks about how difficult online shopping is and to know what you're getting is actually American made and how infuriating that can be. But it tells me, and so we're working with Tammy Baldwin, senator from Wisconsin, and some Republicans for online labeling to strengthen, you know, the Made in America labeling requirement, and also to make sure the Federal Trade Commission is boosting its enforcement to protect consumers in the same way that they are with antitrust and everything else. They got to ramp it up on Made in America.
I've seen the FTC doing hopefully going to be doing a lot of things in the next year or two.
On
antitrust, on breaking up some of these huge monopolies, on holding people accountable, whether it's Pyrex for claiming their products are made in the U.S. or organic farmers who are cheating their customers by giving them crap and calling it organic. You know, the hope is that we hold people accountable. But Scott, as always, great stuff. I appreciate the time. Look forward to having you back again soon.
Can't wait, Rick. Thanks so much. Keep up the great work.
Good stuff. Our good friend Scott Paul. Make sure you check out their website, AmericanManufacturing.org. Scott's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come this way. Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1984. That was the day the Nestle Corporation agreed to terms in order to end a seven-year international boycott against the company. The boycott was over the unsafe and dangerous ways that Nestle marketed and sold its baby formula in third world countries. The boycott began in the United States in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It spread abroad to Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, eventually reaching 10 countries. The campaign was largely grassroots in nature, with local activists organizing different actions. In Massachusetts, boycotters ceremoniously dumped Nestle products in a Boston Nestea party. Finally, after 7 years, the grassroots organizing met its goal. Nestle agreed to follow international standards for baby formula marketing. Boycotts are an important way for consumers and workers to protest corporate practices and social injustice. There have been several very influential boycotts in our nation's history. In the 1950s, the Montgomery bus boycott challenged racial discrimination in one southern city and helped to launch the civil rights movement and empower a generation to fight for equality. In the 1960s, Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta of the United Farm Workers called for a boycott of grape and lettuce growers in California. That boycott helped to bring national attention to the fight to improve pay and working conditions for Latino farm workers in California. In the 1980s, a campaign campaign against goods made in South Africa was a stand against that country's apartheid system. In 1984, the members of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union Local 10 refused to unload a South African ship in the port of Oakland. Their action stood as a powerful statement of international worker solidarity for racial justice. Boycotts have long helped to change the course of history, as citizens stand together in solidarity.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Here's the reality. I have been talking about the need for an industrial policy for decades. You know, the reality is our friends over at the Alliance for American Manufacturing came out with this book on how dependent our military is on foreign chips, foreign magnets, foreign screws, you name it. How dependent we are on our war machine, how dependent we are on other nations. And you go, how does that make any sense? And it's the natural, it really is the natural progression from deindustrialization as a whole. Now, what I find really ironic is, you know, the people who boast about being, you know, the most pro-military, the most, you know, pro-defense, you know, wave the flag the highest and, you know, salute and, you know, and scream the national anthem the loudest are the people who have really screwed this country over the worst. And while we're being patriotic and standing for the national anthem and all of that, well, they're kneeling at the altar of capitalism. They're kneeling for corporate profits. So as we were outsourcing in just obscene levels, letting our steel industry go, letting our aluminum industry go, letting our manufacturing base go, as we were allowing that to happen, our good neoliberal supply side voodoo Reaganomic politicians, they were lining their pockets. They're lining their coffers. So you go, how'd we get here? Rick, how did we get to a position where we're dependent on China for anything in our military? And you go, bad policy. People who were, well, taking campaign contributions from lobbyists who were saying, you know, we could make it a lot more profitable if we just, you know, did this little piece somewhere else. And we'll bring that little piece in, we'll put it, assemble it here, and we'll call it Made in America. And I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's nuts and bolts, screws. I don't care if it's duct tape. Should be made here. If it's part of that military war machine, you need to have domestic production. And the reality is, I'm not a warmonger. I'm actually quite, I've been called a pacifist, but I'm not a pacifist. I don't believe in starting fights. If one breaks out, you got to finish it. I don't back down. But I don't start them. And I agree with Colin Powell. I agree with the Powell Doctrine. Someone hits you with a feather, you hit them with a brick. Ends things quickly. But we're in a moment. And this is a good thing. We're in a moment where that report that I talked about came out over a decade ago. We're finally starting to see people wake up to the reality that, maybe they've gone too far. Bill Clinton himself said, you know, maybe they went too far with their bad trade deals. The question is, given how dysfunctional our folk in Congress are, how we have a Republican Party who wants to destroy things. Can we address this problem? Is this something that can be addressed? Because understand, you look at the CHIPS bill that's going to have massive investment in bringing semiconductor production back and bringing other manufacturing back to this country, of which our billionaire friends are not happy. If you saw some of the responses coming out of Davos about the fact that we're reshoring manufacturing and investing heavily and bringing jobs back and all that here, not happy. And who was at the front of the line? Yeah, Joe Manchin, along with Kyrsten Sinema. And I would argue the entire Republican establishment. Question is, how much more of this are we going to put up with? Again, those jobs coming back, and again, like I said, I'm not a warmonger, but those jobs coming back, those are family-sustaining jobs. Those were good union jobs. And these CEOs, these corporate CEOs, saw an opportunity to fleece the federal government and line their pockets at the expense of our national security. So where is the next Harry Truman? Where is the next Harry Truman going to have a committee?
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.